what I need.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sunday, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our phone number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online, all the time. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. While you're there, don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. Sign up for my Twitter, guys. Follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, where we tweet during the show. There's also a Facebook page. There's all kinds of cool stuff going on in the Think Glink community, and I'll share some more about that coming up a little bit later in the show. So, really interesting news this week. I got to say, feathers are being ruffled all over the place, as the war between the Federal Housing Finance Agency, FHFA, which is regulating Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in their conservatorship, basically bankruptcy, continues. They are now opposing the Obama administration and Ben Bernanke over at the Fed over something called principal reduction. Now, you've probably been hearing about this. It's mortgage forgiveness, and what's been laid out is that the U.S. government needs to do more to help homeowners stay in their properties and not have so many people fall off the cliff into foreclosure. What's driving all this? Well, new report came out this week that nearly 28% of Americans who have mortgages are underwater, right? We've been talking about this for the last few months, that this number isn't really changing, and if anything, it's going up. We had property prices dive in Atlanta 13% year over year, nationally down 4%. There is talk this week by experts who have been right in the past that we could see another reduction of 10% in prices. If prices go down 10% in Atlanta alone, you would create hundreds of thousands of new people who are underwater with their mortgages. It is a little bit scary. What happens when you're underwater? You can't refinance unless you somehow magically qualify for the Home Affordable Refinance Program, HARP 2.0. You can't really sell unless you're going to get your bank to take a short sale. You can't really go where you want to go, hard to rent, and get somebody to pay enough to cover the costs. You are really stuck. But this issue of writing down the principal causes all this emotion across the board. And I have to say that we are in a place of no return. If we don't go forward and force the banks to do this, it's going to be decades before home values come back. Decades. So let me give you a picture of the numbers. This week, the Obama administration announced that there would be principal reductions, and the Bank of America had agreed to cut an additional 200,000 people's loans, their loan, and they're going to do something called mark-to-market. So you remember, I've talked about mark-to-market before, right? This is where the banks have to mark down the value of the real estate loans that they hold to the actual place where they're valued, right? And this has to do with their capital reserves. And over the years of 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, this issue of mark-to-market was suspended for them. They didn't have to do it. Why? Because the bottom fell out of the real estate market. And if banks had to actually mark-to-market, if they had to actually write down the value of those loans, it would have kicked off a disaster for how much capital they would have needed to prove that they were stable. Remember when the Fed ran all the banks through this kind of stress test? It was all cooked. I mean, it's just ridiculous that we were supposed to believe that they had run them through their paces and they would be fine. This was just really to assure the American public that we weren't Greece, right? So now the Obama administration and the Fed are saying, no, banks, now you have to mark down as part of this $25 billion settlement that got filed on Friday. It's supposed to get filed on Friday. I think it got filed in court. You're supposed to be marking down 2 million mortgages. You're supposed to reduce principal on 2 million. Now, this has always been a possibility. It's always been possible for the banks to mark down the principal and do a principal reduction, but they didn't want to do that. Why? We have pool servicing agreements. We just can't. Well, now they're supposed to do it, except that any loans that are backed by Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, USDA are not eligible. So this is the bank stuff, and supposedly these banks are supposed to take the hits. rather than the investors. The investors are all up in arms, right? Because what happens when you mark down the value of a loan security? The investors take the haircut. The home, somebody wins and somebody loses every single time. So the homeowner gets the house that was $250 and is mortgaged for $250 and is now $150 is going to be written to $150. Okay. And the investors on the other side take that $100,000 loss. Now, the banks in the $25 billion settlement have agreed to provide at least $7.6 billion in relief by lowering mortgage balances and, crucially, allowing homes to be sold for less than the mortgage amount. You need to do a short sale. You're supposed to be able to do it now. However, $7.6 billion sounds like a really big number. You know how big it is? It's infinitesimally small. It's like 1/100th of probably what it should be. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but the truth of the matter is that 2 million people are supposed to get some sort of principal reduction. 2 million. You know how many people are underwater in this country? Almost 16 million. So 2 million people are going to get help, and 16 million people need it. I think, and this is just a wild guess, in Atlanta alone, in the metropolis of Atlanta, there are more than 2 million people who are underwater. That's just a guess. I mean, between Atlanta, Florida, Nevada, Arizona, the state of Michigan, and parts of California, you are so far above the $2 million person number. What are we going to do? Are we going to have everybody like flock to Washington and 2 million people, the first 2 million in line, you guys are the ones who are going to get the principal reductions? Really? There is absolutely no detail about who's getting the 2 million principal reductions. I don't know how they're going to do it. The detail, the devil is always in the details with this kind of stuff. And we have seen it over and over again. We have seen it every single time the government has announced a new program. Big fanfare. It's like the Queen of England is coming and is going to save the day. And all the trumpets play. And then what happens? You guys get promised something and nobody delivers. And that is why we are now 6 years, 5 years into the worst housing crisis since the Great Depression. It just can't seem to get solved. The banks don't want to take a hit. Nobody wants to take a hit. Now, in addition to what's being required, Bank of America, which acquired Countrywide, came to be understood to have basically the worst lending practices out there. Lending practices that have almost taken down Bank of America. They're going to do an extra 200,000 principal reductions. Bank of America is going to do it because it will reduce the $3.25 billion penalties that it faces from the foreclosure settlement by $850 million. If they do 200,000 more reductions, they're going to save $850 million. So who is eligible for those 200,000 principal reductions? Who? Well, according to a story that ran, and I searched through so many stories to find this, looks like underwater homeowners are eligible if they live in the home as a principal residence, have a loan serviced by Bank of America, and were at least 60 days delinquent on their mortgage as of January 30th. And the cutoff date was imposed to keep borrowers from intentionally going delinquent with the hopes of getting their principal balance chopped. Now, this is the first time in 5 years that I've seen anything that really in writing confirms that if you were delinquent by 60 days, you might be eligible to get your loan chopped. And let's just be really clear about this. Once again, these agreements do not guarantee that you will be offered a loan modification or what the terms of that will be. The bank is going to calculate the expected loss on a foreclosure and modify the terms only to the extent that the investor and the bank come out ahead by doing the principal modification rather than a foreclosure. But now, Bank of America, under the terms of this agreement, they're going to put principal reduction among the first steps as opposed to the last steps. Why the last steps? Then nobody gets a principal modification. Nobody gets the balance of the loan chopped. But now, supposedly, it's going to go up. Really? Really? I'm not so sure. I am not so sure we're going to see this happen. But, and by the way, this doesn't have to happen over the next 6 weeks. This isn't going to roll out fully. The $25 billion foreclosure settlement isn't even going to roll out fully for 3 years. 3 years. And let's just be clear again, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA do not qualify for any of this. Why? Because Edward DeMarco, who is running the Federal Housing Finance Agency, says no, that this would cost Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac billions of dollars more, maybe $100 billion more. And by the way, the U.S. government has already bailed out Fannie and Freddie to $150 billion. So the war that has been going on in Washington, behind the scenes, between the guy who's regulating Fannie and Freddie and what is effectively bankruptcy, they call it conservatorship because it sounds nice, that guy has squared off against the Obama administration and the Fed and said, no, we're not doing it. And the Obama administration and Fed say, yes, you are. And meanwhile, you're the one who's lost. You're the one in a house that is now worth 40% of what it was. You're the one who's underwater. You're the one who can't get help. And wait till I tell you about the Seventh Circuit of Appeals Court and what happened there this week. Because I think this could be the start of a class action lawsuit that everybody gets to join in on. I know that I've been sent so much from all these attorneys across the country that they are starting, you know, their own class action lawsuits and whatever. Well, a whole bunch of these court cases were lost at the first level. But now one went to appeal. And the Seventh Circuit issued a stunning rebuke. It was Wells Fargo, but it could have been any of the big banks. A stunning rebuke in Chicago at the Seventh Circuit of Appeals that I think could be a game changer for what happened to millions of Americans who applied for loan modifications, were told if they made three payments that they would get their loan mods and didn't get them, got their credit completely screwed up. And now there's been a case at the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals that finally supports the homeowners. And when we come back, I'm going to talk about that. We're going to take your calls. Are you in this position? Let us know. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Klink. You're listening to AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Robert Ellis, friend of mine, you know, he's always
25 minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink. I can't even say my own name. I've had so much caffeine this morning. The Elise Klink Show. Thanks for joining us here on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750. We are talking about loan modifications and what I have always called loan modification hell. Basically, you get in and you never get out. Patrick joins us on the line now from Atlanta. Hi, Patrick.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I actually talked to you a few weeks ago, and I was just calling to give you a follow-up. Shortly after I talked to you, that following week, I actually received my paperwork from Chase, granting me the first step in the process for the trial payments for the HAMP program, because I do have an FHA loan. And I've actually just gotten that paperwork with the affidavit to sign saying that you agree to their terms. And although that they did grant me the modification or the process, to start the process, they actually cut my first three trial payments, which start in April 1st, go through June the 1st, only cut it of $209. Now, I'm very grateful to that, but it's still not in the parameters, you know, the percentage of my income, because this was the second time I've actually had to go through this, because they denied me the first time because I wasn't behind on my payments.
So which, by the way, you're not supposed to have been behind.
Right, yeah,
which is a crock, an absolute crock.
And 60 days, and then did that process. Of course, they still continue to send you letters saying, hey, if you don't pay this, you know, you're balancing full payment, you know, whatever's expected, that they're going to start the foreclosure processes. So I started again in September being behind, and actually, like I said, just I think 9 days ago.
Mm-hmm.
I got the paperwork, and they did, like I said, they did reduce the payment by $200, but it isn't, like you said, not a guarantee, and I still can't get the how they came up with that equation to cut it by just the $209 because, like I said, it's not even in
the parameters
of the percentage of my income.
Yeah, but there's no, Patrick, you're expecting to apply logic and reality to this situation, and you can't. The real question is, can you make it on $209? Can you actually go through and pay, get a $209 reduction, which you're not even guaranteed? Wait till you hear about this court case and what it says about when lenders tell you that you are going to get, you know, if you make your three payments, you're going to get a loan mod, and what happened afterwards. $209, is it going to be a game changer for you? If it's not going to be a game changer, there are some very real reasons why you may not even want to take this loan modification offer, and you want to maybe continue to negotiate. Think about that. 404-872-0750. We have to take a short break. I'm Elise Glink. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
She wore glass slippers.
35 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Excuse me. Thanks for joining us here. Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, my website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. During the break, I was chatting on Twitter, since another reason to follow me on Twitter, I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, at Twitter. One of our listeners said, great concept about principal reductions, but I'm current on my underwater mortgage. No help for me. Is anybody really ticked off about the principal mortgage reductions? That's the question that a number of people have now tweeted me, and I have been tweeting out to them as well. Join this conversation at Twitter and tell us what you think. 404-872-0750. I want to come back now to this court case that was really interesting. So a Chicago homeowner who is exactly like you, who was denied participation in a loan modification program, even after she made 4 on-time payments, right? So her lender, Wells Fargo, one of the big ones, could have been Chase, could have been Bank of America, could have been Citi, but hers happened to be Wells Fargo. She sued them in 2010 after Wells Fargo said she was ineligible for the Home Affordable Modification Program, or HAMP. Couldn't get a loan mod. The woman's name is Lori Wygod, and she sued them because they broke a promise. Now, we have talked about this promise thousands of times on this show over the last 3 or 4 years. The promise was this: if you made 3 on-time payments of the new amount, you would get a loan modification. It was a promise made by President Obama. We heard about it through Ben Bernanke. We heard about it through all the other people who were involved in this program. I'm pretty darn sure that Tim Geithner said it. If you make it, these payments, then you're going to get your loan modification. Right? And what the banks have been counting on is that they are federally chartered. They are overseen by the OCC, and they don't have to live and die by state mortgage law. And I could go on for at least 2 more hours about this difference between federal charter and state chartered lenders and how people like you get screwed by it. But that's a little off topic. So let's go back to this court case, because what ended up happening is U.S. District Judge Blanche Manning threw out the complaint alleging that Wygod's claims were barred by federal law. Federal chartered banks have a separate set of laws. They don't have to pay attention to state banking law. So in Georgia, you have a federally chartered lender. They don't pay attention to Georgia law. Okay? But why God went back. And she appealed it, and the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals, in an opinion released Wednesday, overturned the judge's decision and revived most of the suit. Why? Because the appeals court said that why God's claim for breach of contract and fraud under state law are not barred. They said that she has every right to sue them under state law, whereas Wells Fargo and the other banks have argued that HAMP precludes individuals from bringing lawsuits for alleged violations of federal law. It's a wonderful deal if you can get it, folks, isn't it? We're going to do what we want, and we're not going to tell you the fine print, and we're going to go behind closed doors. I was at one of those closed door meetings with Sam. We were absolutely appalled by what we saw about how the banks were deciding who was going to get a loan modification or not. Okay? We were just kind of appalled. Just a little bit disgusted. Meanwhile, to you, right, the loan modification is life or death. To you, the loan modification is all about whether you're going to get to stay in your home or whether you're going to have your credit destroyed for the next 5 to 10 years by having to leave your house and go through a foreclosure. I mean, it's like water. So the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals said, yes, she can sue. And the appellate court said it identified more than 80 federal cases in which consumers have brought HAMP-related claims. 50 of the cases have been thrown out. But this was allowed to stand. And it was turned back to the district court and said, no, she can sue. And the banks have got to be shaking. Because it's the first appellate court to speak on the consumer lawsuit issue involving HAMP. And it's significant. And it means that there could be an opportunity for a class action lawsuit. And I'll bet you know about 25 people who would love to join it. You and you and you and you and you, right? Everybody. Because this is one of the great promises that was made. And you could say the fine print said, no, it wasn't really a promise, and we always had our fingers crossed behind our back just in case. But you know what? It was a big promise made to the American public as a way to fix what was going on. Controversial, yes. Right? You're on time with your mortgage, and you're doing everything you're supposed to do. You thought you were going to get the law. You were going to get that loan modification. This is a really interesting court case. It has deep ramifications for you and everybody you know who's underwater and who's been trying to get a loan modification, like Patrick, who just called in, and we're going to be watching this case very closely. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Margaret joins us on the line. Margaret, welcome to the Elise Glink Show.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. What's on your mind today?
Well, what happened with me is I'm actually in Atlanta right now. Mm-hmm. I came here. I lived in my house in Colorado, outside of Colorado, Centennial.
Uh-huh.
And I got behind, went through a divorce, and
that sounds, you know, was it recent, the divorce?
It happened in 2010.
That's pretty recent.
Yeah, it is. And so I got behind, but I did do a loan modification through this company, Bayview Lending,
mm-hmm.
out of Florida.
Yep.
Originally, my mortgage was with Citi, and when I kind of got behind, they sold it to Bayview. So I did a loan modification, and it was for 3 months, and I did everything that I want, if they wanted, and I explained what was going on, that I was working at Home Depot part-time, and I was having a hard time, and but I did do it, and then they came back and said, oh, well, we're not going to approve you, you know.
And what was their reason for not approving you? And by the way, your story is like, you know, maybe thousands and thousands and thousands of stories I've heard, right? You thought that your deal was you make these three payments as tough as it is for you, and you're going to get a loan modification. And when they came back, what did they say?
They told me that I wasn't making enough money at Home Depot. And, you know, it was me and my daughter, you know, I'm a single parent, you know.
That's got to just be, I mean, you're thinking to yourself, I have done everything I'm supposed to do. I'm killing myself to provide for my daughter. I'm a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
And where are we going to live?
Well, that's what happened. So to make a long story short, I ended up going to school, you know, to become a massage therapist, and I kept working at Home Depot, and I was going to, I ended up, you know, not doing another loan modification. My trust level went down, and, you know, now I feel like I made such a big mistake, you know, and I have all this regret about the house and moving her here, and I feel like I just messed up my credit. I'd lived in that house 17 years.
So I just have to, you know, I'm in my house 17 years. It'll be 18 years this October.
Mm-hmm.
When you stay in a place that long, when you raise a family, when you get married and then divorced in a house, it's so different than when you own, like, a share of stock. Right? People talk about houses, investments, but what they don't understand is the emotional component that you become so attached to the memories you've built, the life that you've led, the child that you've raised.
Yes.
There's just so much more there.
I know. And it's just been heartbreaking. And I'm here in Atlanta now. You know, I came to live with, you know, my mom, but my sons are still in Colorado, and I want to go back there, but, you know, the house is gone, and it's just been devastating emotionally, and I've blamed myself, you know. I've been like, well, I should have tried harder, I should have done this, I should have done that.
What could you have done? Tell me what you could have done, because I want to tell you that I think there's very little other than winning the lottery that you could have done to get dig yourself out, because what the banks have systematically done is allowed people to dig holes that they never should have dug, and they're so deep and they're so painful that very few people, relatively speaking, are getting out of them.
Yeah. I guess looking back on it, you know, maybe, you know, because I did go to school to better my life, you know, at the time, you know, I became a massage therapist. I thought, well, I don't, you know, I want to make more money and, you know, better my life. And so I just kind of, you know, got the idea in my head that I'll just let it go. And I probably was, you know, taking advice from people like, oh, it's not that big of a deal. Everybody's losing their home, you know. But, you know, looking back on it, I'm like, well, you try losing your house. You know, it has not been easy.
Oh, Margaret.
So
my heart breaks for you. It is not easy. It isn't easy, and it's okay, and it's totally okay to cry about this, because this is a huge loss. It's you're mourning it. You're mourning the loss of those memories, the fact that you've been separated from your children, the divorce, and all that went into it. Even if that was the right move, all of that gets it's just all rolled together.
So what my question is now, my ex-husband had told me that Obama had some kind of thing for people that lost their homes, like that they're going to give them $2,000 to help them move or something. I don't even know what he's talking about. But
so there is something called Independent Foreclosure Review.
Okay.
.com.
Independent Foreclosure Review.com.
And because you no longer live in Colorado, I'm sure they have no idea how to find you. And when you go to this website, you're going to think to yourself, this looks like a scam website that Elise Glink sent me to. But I promise you that it is not a scam website. It's just really ugly and meant to look like a scam website. But it's actually overseen by the Fed and the OCC.
Yeah.
Read the information. Call the toll-free number. Ask for an independent foreclosure review of your foreclosure.
Independent Foreclosure Review.com.
You are entitled...
My house ended up getting, you know, put on the auction steps, and I guess there's no way I can get it back, right? It's water under the bridge.
Is it gone? Did somebody buy it?
Yes. Like, right away.
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, boy.
You know what? Let me say something to you that I hope will help.
Okay.
As many memories and as much love as you left behind in that house... A house is really just four walls, a ceiling, and a floor.
I know.
I firmly believe what makes a house a home are the people and the love inside of it. And whether you have your house in Colorado or whether you live with your mom in Atlanta, having your family and the people you love with you is really what makes the house the home. And over time, you will rebuild another house with the things that you love and the people you love.
Yes.
And so it isn't your only chance. You don't have to have that house back. You can let that go.
Okay.
You can mourn it. You can cry over it. But don't lose any more sleep over it.
Okay.
Really?
I because my sons are in Colorado, and I have, seven grandchildren there, and I miss them. So.
You're going to get back there. You're going to get back there. This is a little detour in the tapestry of your life. It's just run away a little bit, but
yeah.
You're going to get back there, and you're going to rebuild as a massage therapist, as a mom, as a grandma.
Yeah.
And you're going to get back to where you want to be. It's just going to take a little bit of time. But I believe that you can do it, Margaret.
Thank you so much. And then just one more question. You know, my credit, I have such fear about, am I going to be able to find a place to live? Have I messed everything up? Because I always had good credit.
You're going to be fine. So you won't be able to buy a house for a few years.
That's okay.
Big deal. But you will find people who will rent to you.
Mm-hmm.
You will be able to rent the house that you want, and you will be able to get back on your feet. And what I want you to do is focus on saving, and every day write to yourself, this is what I want. This is the house I'm looking for. This is where I want to live. These are the goals that I have for myself. And write it down every day, because when you write it down, you commit in your head to making it happen, and it will happen faster than you can even imagine.
That's right. Well, I'm an artist, so I like to visualize, so I'll do that.
You do that. Will you call me and let me know what happens?
Yes, I will.
All right.
Thank you, Elise.
You're welcome, Margaret. Take a deep breath and go and enjoy the day. It's 51 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Kling. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB. 56 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB, 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Danielle joins us on the line from Alpharetta. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, Elise. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good.
What's on your mind today?
Got a quick question. Our loan used to be with Bank of America. We tried to do a loan modification with them. When we started that process, they sold it to another bank.
Doesn't that sound familiar?
No. So the process with this bank has been going on for about 3 months. I haven't gotten any kind of response from them. Whenever I call them, their voicemails are always full.
Of course.
Can't talk to anyone. So I'm trying to see what other kind of options we have. I had heard about HUD-approved counseling.
Yes.
Mediator.
So, have you gone to the website makinghomeaffordable.gov yet?
Yes.
Okay. On that website, there is a phone number for people who help and kind of act. They're the HUD-approved housing counselors. It's the Homeowners for Hope hotline. The number is 888-995-HOPE. Minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Elise Glink. You're listening to the Elise Glink Show live on Sundays here on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time, the website thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter over at thinklink.com. You will see all kinds of amazing information. And if you haven't checked out our new blog at the Equifax Finance blog, you are in for a real treat, because we have a new category of information, right? So we've always had credit, insurance, tax, retirement, real estate. We have now added family money. And because we've added family money, we have opened up the well for all kinds of really interesting conversations about things like prepaid debit cards and whether those things are good. Are you paying interest? Are you saving money and how to think about it? How to create a spending plan for your family? There's all kinds of really great information over at the Equifax Finance blog. The way you get there is to simply go to Equifax.com and click on where it says Finance Blog, or you can type in blog.equifax.com. Or you can sign up for my free weekly newsletter, and that will give you access to all of the really cool Equifax Finance Blog stories. But we would love for you to stop by, try it out, check out our new family money category, and see if there's some information there that will help you in planning for your family this year. 404-872-0750. It is 9 minutes past the hour. Let's go back to the phones. Brad joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Brad.
Good morning.
How are you? I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you.
Good.
Elise, I have a question on the real estate market, and specifically where I am in Cherokee County, if possible, but basically in Metro Atlanta. We took our hit on this real estate market. We bought in 2006 into a new development. So we were the first homeowners in a new development that had several spec homes in it that all went into foreclosure and have since been sold at low, low prices.
What did you pay for your house?
We paid about $800,000. For the house. It's probably worth half that.
Oh, that's
so
heartbreaking.
That's the bad news. The good news is that we have been in a business for that period of time that has done well. And the investment is a real estate-based investment in assisted living that we've created a lot of value in. So we are getting ready to sell that investment and are looking at a like-kind exchange as a way to help us to recover. So the question I have is, would you invest in the Atlanta real estate market at all?
Well, are we talking commercial? Are we talking residential? What do you think?
Probably residential.
Okay.
We're looking at basically taking the proceeds and putting about half of it into paying all our debt off, most of our debt off, except for the debt on this house that we're currently living in, and then using the rest of the cash to invest in. We're looking at houses in Milledgeville, where my daughter's probably going to go to school, to buy as a rental property. We're looking at some land up here in Cherokee County that we like, but we don't know what to offer on it. So we're looking at various things. You know,
let me start by saying, first of all, I'm glad you have some good news with your bad news.
Thank you.
Right? Because that's gotta make you feel pretty good. And
I feel okay. We're still emotionally. We've been going through a rough 5 years here. So yeah.
Oh, there's no question. When you stand on your doorstep and you look around, and you're watching the value fall off as if it was a blue light special at Walmart.
Right.
That doesn't ever feel good.
The other thing I recently discovered that I didn't realize is that if we sell this house at a loss, we can't take the loss on our taxes.
That's correct. You can't, because it's a personal residence.
Yeah.
That also stinks, because really, if you sell it and you probably would not, well, would you be able to get away with a short sale? Probably not, if you have all these other assets.
Right.
And so you have to think very carefully about how you set up the ownership of the other assets so that you have some level of protection should you need it.
Okay.
And I would be very careful, and I would talk to a very smart, not just real estate attorney, but you probably want to talk to either a tax attorney or even an estate attorney.
Mm-hmm.
Put that team together first so that you really think carefully about how you're making the sale and the purchase happen. First of all, you've got 1031 issues. So you need a good 1031 company, you know, because you're going to be doing the like-kind exchange. That's 1031.
Mm-hmm.
You are going to need real estate attorneys who really understand that and do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have to get that set up. But it's what name you buy the properties in and how you get that organized that's going to be pretty key.
Okay. In terms of protecting ourselves personally from anything that may happen with the current residence we're in. Is that what you're talking about?
That's what If, let's say, you do a short sale and they look at your assets and they say, this guy's got rental properties, this guy's got a big investment here, he's got this. They can't touch your 401k,
right?
But they can go after other things. So
right.
There are ways to protect yourself,
yeah,
somewhat. And you want to see if you can do that. Because I'm not saying that you're going to walk away from this property. You may not. But if you decide, and you may say, you know what, I'm going to take $400,000 and pay it down, and this is just a loss we're going to take. I personally have lost about $160,000 in a rental property. Kills me every time I think about it. I said to Sam the other day, is there any movement? We had two foreclosures in the building. It's a condo. And it's like, oh, okay. I guess those prices aren't coming back anytime soon.
Yeah.
So I feel your pain. I don't feel it to $400,000. I feel it to $160,000. But I feel it anyway.
And that's kind of the question: is what is the next 5 years look like? What does the next 5 years look like in terms of?
I think you're buying at the bottom or near bottom in Atlanta.
Okay.
If you are looking at a 5 to 10 year investment, which is what I think you'd have to be looking at, unless you get really lucky. I think that in 5 to 10 years, we're going to look back and go 2012, 2013 were the low points.
Yeah.
And so when you buy low, at some point in time, you're going to be selling high. I have investor friends in Atlanta who've been buying for 20 years,
mm-hmm.
and they are buying like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
They are getting amazing deals. They're buying commercial properties. They're buying residential properties. They're buying strip centers.
Mm-hmm.
They're going crazy buying stuff because the lenders have finally understood they're going to have to let all these properties go.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So you asked me, would I invest in the market? And the answer is, if I was an investor with cash to spend, now is the time that I would be buying.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if it gets a little better than this, I don't think you can time this stuff, right?
Right.
Every neighborhood's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have to go, what's happening on this block today, and what could go wrong on this block today or in the next 2 years? What could go right on this block today? And
yeah.
It's block by block by block as you walk your way through the entire Atlanta metro area.
Yeah. And it's really stressful to try to, you know, after you've been through this kind of a loss, to try and think through. Because we looked at property 2 years ago that's on the market now for half of what it was 2 years ago. So, you know, at what point is it going to stop doing this?
you know, you need exceptional courage to enter a marketplace that looks this bleak.
Yeah.
Right? It looks so bad out there, and I can hear it in your voice. I mean, this is, you are up at night. You are not eating well. You're probably trying to work yourself out like crazy to go for runs, try to work that stress out. I have a friend who's a land planner, and he's in partners with a really talented architect and another guy who's the construction thing, and the three of them have had this amazing business for all these years up until 3 years ago when they had to fire almost all of their 25 employees.
Yeah.
And now they've rented out some of the desk space simply because they can't get out of their lease.
Yeah.
And the guy looks like he's 25 years old. He's my age. He's like in his late 40s. But he looks like he's 25 years old because he literally runs, swims, bikes. Like, that is how he has been working out his stress about this.
Yeah.
And it's just, I can hear it in your voice. I mean, you almost are wondering, because I'm sure that if you bought something and it went south, even though you've had this win on the assisted living thing, right? If you bought something else and it went south like the first one,
mm-hmm.
you'd go out of your mind.
Yeah. Well, we just have to go into it with a kind of a longer term horizon here and have some faith, I guess, that things will turn around eventually.
I would not bet against the U.S. government ever, no matter who's leading it, Republican or Democrat, right?
Yeah.
I wouldn't bet against us, ever. So they'll eventually get this right. The pain points along the way have been extreme and unnecessary.
Yeah,
But it's painful for people like you and Danielle and Margaret and Patrick, everybody who's called in today.
Mm-hmm.
It's been extreme and extremely unnecessary, right?
Yeah.
I think that if you make a... I don't want you to doubt what you know.
Yeah.
I don't want you to second guess yourself. You obviously can make smart real estate moves. Sometimes you get lucky, but luck is usually tinged with some knowledge. And my sense of it is that you can do this.
Yeah.
So what I would do is work with the best agent you can find who really understands the REOs. I would focus on foreclosures. I would make offers that are exactly where you want them to be. There's always another foreclosure. I wouldn't jump just because you think somebody else is going to get it. And I would wait for the right deal. But I would be out there looking, money in hand.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to do a 1031, you are locked into a timing situation.
Yeah.
And you have to make it work within the... You have to designate in 90 days. You have to close in 180 days.
Mm-hmm.
And if you miss that, you blow it, and that's a whole lot of tax you're going to have to pay.
Right.
So I don't want that to happen to you.
Yeah.
But I would also...
I mean, if that's the worst thing, that we end up not spending it, we have to pay a capital gain tax on it, and, you know, and that's kind of the real question is, would it be better to just pay the gain now and not even worry about this real estate market, get into something else, but what else are you going to get into?
Listen, Warren Buffett says real estate's on sale, it's 50% off, and when you're an investor, you go to the place that's 50% off.
Yeah, that's right.
I really think this is an opportunity for you to make good, and don't try to get even with your $800,000 investment. Like, don't make it the goal to get another $400,000 back just to make up for the $400,000 you lost there. You've already done that.
Yeah.
What you want to do is make a reasoned, careful investment or series of investments with the guidance of your baseball team behind you, right? Your home buying team behind you of inspector, lender, attorneys, agent if you need one, and you want to put that team together now and then start at your... You need a 1031 partner as well, and you want to put all that together so that you really are making an incredibly smart move. You don't want to make a bad move, and the way to counteract a bad move is by having knowledge and forward momentum, right? It's backed by knowledge. You move forward step by step. You're thoughtful. You're caring. You understand the risks, Brad. You're going to make a smart move. I have tremendous amount of faith that you're going to make the right smart move. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. We have to take a short break. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Up in Indiana where the tall corn grows, thinking about a girl named Rose, hair on his head and long as a rose, up in Indiana where the tall corn grows.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for listening today. 404-872-0750. Ron joins us on the line from Powder Springs. Hey, Ron.
Good morning. How are you, Elise?
I'm good. What are you thinking about today?
Well, I was listening to you on the radio earlier, and you were kind of beating up the banks. I'm not a banker, but you were, you know, saying the debacle was because of the banks. But the banks were doing what the government told them and made them do. And I think that's a point that you missed.
The banks have done a lot of things that nobody told them to do. Let's back up. Yeah, if you just look back at 2008, you can say Well, the government told Bank of America to buy Countrywide. Well, sort of. Not really. Bank of America wanted to buy Countrywide because Countrywide had this amazing book of 6 million loans, and they wanted to be the number one bank in the country. It was important to them to buy that market share. So what they didn't know is that Countrywide's loans were crap, were lousy. They didn't know that. They didn't know because nobody else had played by the rules of the game. So you can say, and what I'm mad at the banks about, and I don't think I'm alone here.
No?
I don't think I'm alone here. I think what I'm upset with the banks about is how they've treated people.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
You come back to a better man.
The hour on the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. We are talking about the real estate of real estate today. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter and check out all the different kinds of things we're doing in the ThinkLink community, from the Equifax Finance blog to working with eCredible, helping people who have no credit get enough credit that they can buy a house, buy a car, do all kinds of really interesting things. You can just click on the box on thinklink.com and it'll tell you more about it. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Larry joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hi, Larry.
Ms. Glink, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I have a little bit of a different perspective from yours. I am, in fact, a federal bank regulator.
All right.
I'm in the industry. A couple of quick points that maybe the listeners are not aware of. There was a gentleman who called who mentioned the government has been pushing banks to make loans. That, in fact, is true. Number two, banks are businesses just like General Electric. They have to make a profit. They also employ people. When the customers stop paying loans, who ends up with the problem? The bank does, and in order to solve the problems, because they're not making any money, they have to lay off people. So that's something else. Number three, if you have one child as a parent, and all of a sudden you end up with 30 children for whatever reason to look after, the way you have to look after those kids is different from just looking after one child.
Are you referring to borrowers as children? Is that the? I just want to make sure I understand the connection you're making.
Analogy, because when the banks have to start foreclosing, they end up with all these properties where people have borrowed money but are not repaying the banks, and so the banks end up with lots of properties that aren't paying, and so their approach to handling foreclosures is different with multitudes of foreclosures than if there were just, say, one or two. And finally, I guess I would say to people, don't just call the bank or get on your horse and ride over to the bank, sit down, and talk to them eyeball to eyeball. I wouldn't expect Wes Moss to give me a financial plan over the telephone. So if you want to have if you have a problem with your mortgage, go see the banker, sit down with him. The banks do not want the properties. They don't.
Larry, this is the first place that you and I agree. I agree with you that the banks don't want the properties, but I will tell you that it is next to impossible to walk into a local Chase, Bank of America, and then what about all the people who are with Ocwen when they don't even pick up the phones? It is really impossible to walk into a local branch and get anybody to sit down who knows anything who can help you. And if you think that that is possible, then you and I are so far apart, because I would argue it is impossible to do that. There are some places where some of the lenders have opened up storefronts where you can go in. They are few and far between across this country. But the average branch is not set up for this. And all these servicers who are across the country who are kind of web only, there are no storefronts. Show me where Ocwen has a storefront. They don't. So that is absolutely a place where I can't believe you would give that advice, because it just doesn't work.
Well,
I also have to say, as a federal bank regulator, banks are in the business of making money. And I don't have any problem with them making money. But where were the federal bank regulators when Countrywide was basically jigging the books and getting people to lie on their applications, and then that got pushed through. Where were the federal banking regulators?
Well, I'll be glad to tell you what happened. The people in Congress put a lot of pressure on the regulators to make these low-income, no-income loans, and Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae bought these loans from the banks. And I guess I would say I put the problem back on the interference with of the federal government for having Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae do what you know what they have done. As I mentioned, I'm a regulator. I tried to put pressure on the banks to put reserves aside. The banks would try to push back and say, well, you know, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are buying these loans from us, and
Everybody got rewarded in the wrong way, is really what you're saying, right? Fannie and Freddie were rewarded by the stock market for basically showing obscene profits. They were
correct.
Paying themselves millions and millions of dollars a year.
That's correct.
And that it was obscene. They weren't listening to the regulators. The regulators were pushing for more capital reserves at the bank, and the banks were like, no, and they created a system of all kinds of credit default swaps that nobody could understand. Not Ben Bernanke, who certainly is one of the smartest mathematical minds in this country. Even he said he couldn't really understand it. So the federal banking regulators, and I'm sorry to pick on you, Larry, but you're the one who called in today. You probably never do that again. But seriously, you know, I think there has to be accountability, not just to the banks with their powerful lobbies, but to the people who are going to these banks so that they can get a fair treatment. I got to tell you, when I sign an 80-page loan document with a million disclosures, I read that fine print. But why is a loan document 80 pages long? Who is it really protecting? I would argue it's not protecting the American public. It's protecting the banks.
Remember this, Glink, if you bought a house for $100,000 and you put down $20,000, that means $80,000 you have borrowed from the bank. So the bank is taking the majority of the risk. And so the bank has to protect themselves, and you as a consumer have to be intelligent enough, or should be intelligent enough, to know what's going on.
I would say, aren't federal banking regulators, though, isn't somebody supposed to also be looking out to make sure that the American public understands what's going on? I would argue that you are absolutely right. The bank is taking most of the risk. But there were incredible forces that happened over the last 4 years. And you could say, well, when 30 people stop making their mortgage payments, banks have to deal with it differently. It's true. They do have to deal with it differently. The problem was it was business as usual for a long time. And it's really caused this problem to extend years, and maybe it'll be decades before we come back to normal. But you can't only make the pain be felt with the people. Everybody has to share when you have a colossal problem like this. If you look at what's going on in Greece with 25% unemployment, and they're in major default, and their economy is contracting like crazy, we don't want to end up like that here. And so everybody looked at the stock market, and everybody goes, oh, the stock market in the U.S. is fine, so everything's getting better, and I'm not sure it is. But you just can't make 27 million people experience the pain, and nobody else does. And you can say that the banks didn't cause this, but I would argue, we would have to agree to disagree. I think that there were some specific things that were done by the banks that aggravated the situation. And I do believe that everybody's got to put something on the line now, or we aren't going to get into it. I mean, your house, if you live in Atlanta, your house went down another 13% in value this year. How are you going to feel next year when it goes down another 10%? And the next year?
You're absolutely right, but I'm not blaming the banks. And you know, the banks have employed people, and those people's houses have diminished in value, or they've gotten laid off. I've been involved where banks have laid off people, or banks have closed, and it is a gut-wrenching experience to go through, even though I wasn't laid off, but to see these people with no job. And yes, I still ultimately, and I guess this is where you and I disagree, I still ultimately blame the federal government for sticking their nose in the business of forcing banks to make these types of loans to people who really couldn't afford to buy the house to begin with.
The banks made millions, maybe even billions of dollars in profit doing that. I don't think they were such unwilling participants.
No, they weren't. But if you didn't have Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae saying, if you adhere to our guidelines, we will buy these loans from you, you know, Mr. Banker, and then you're free to turn around and make another loan. If you didn't have that type of setup, Ms. Glink, you wouldn't have had the banks engaging in what I call this risky lending. And I'm not absolving the bankers. They should have been more careful. And believe me, as a regulator, I tried to beat them up and present to them prudent banking procedures, you know, to follow. But then the bankers would complain to their congresspeople, and people in Congress would then jump on the various regulatory agencies and say, your examiners are being too hard on these bankers. And so as a regulator, we were sort of caught between the bank on one side and Congress on the other side. The problem is everybody, as you have said, you know, is paying the price. I'm paying the price. I'm certainly not exempt, you know, from the problems. I can't sell my house here in DeKalb County. So I'm not exempt either, but I don't blame the banks. It's just a shame that the situation evolved into this debacle that all these people, you know, are sharing the pain, and there's so many layoffs, and the economy is really not back where it should be. And people who make their living in the construction industry, you know, they're not enjoying themselves. So it is a sacrifice that we're all undergoing. But to me, the ultimate root of the problem goes back to the so-called easy money that Congress was pushing for people who really could not afford their homes.
Well, Larry, I thank you for calling in, and I thank you for your opinion. And you're not wrong. Congress certainly had a big part to play, but not this Congress. This goes back way beyond, you know, this is back early 2000s, even into the mid-1990s, when 1993 mortgage interest rates fell below 6% for the very first time. This is where it goes back. And so I think there's probably a lot of blame. As I say on the show every week, everybody's got blame, everybody's got pain, everybody's got to take their chunk of it and move on. Thank you so much for your call.
Bye.
48 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. Tom joins us on the line. Hey, Tom.
Hey, how are you?
All right.
My question, I'll make it quick. We went through the first loan modification, and just so Larry understands, we put over 20% down, and then any upgrades in house, we put cash. But we went through the first loan modification, and I was laid off, and we called City Mortgage to see what we could do, and they said, well, you won't qualify unless you're behind in your mortgage. So, well, we're not. We never have been. Well, you have to be behind. So on that, it took them a year to finally close this deal, this loan modification with us, all right? After 6 months, we started paying a full mortgage payment plus the late charges and service charges that they were sending people to our house, so that was a service charge. You know, see, we were still living here, and everything else that built up during that time. But after all was said and done, at least they dropped it one percentage point. I think it took about $200 off our mortgage, and they gave us a 40-year mortgage. Okay, we had a 30-year. They gave us a 40-year mortgage. Okay, and we asked them, look, isn't there anything else we can do? So listen, if you don't do this right now or come up with the 10 grand I think that we were behind at this point now, okay, we're going to start foreclosures immediately. So we went ahead and took the 40-year mortgage. And I don't know what else to do. I don't know what else to do at this point.
How are you? Are you employed again?
Yes, I am.
And so you're now getting back on your feet financially.
We're starting to, yeah. But you know we.
It's such a shame. See, it's such a shame. And while I totally appreciate what Larry, the banking regulator, is saying, the reality of the situation on the ground is somebody like you, Tom, or you know, some of the other Patrick who called earlier, or Margaret. I mean, the reality on the ground is so divorced from what you know, everybody thinks should be happening, or maybe was happening, or from the government perspective, you know, was intended to be happening. It's on the ground, the stuff that I find unforgivable.
Yeah, I mean, you know, during that time, it was tough, and plus our house took a hit too, like many others. You know, we lost between $70,000 and $80,000 in equity that we never took out of the house. So you know, we're on the bottom of that rung as well. But you know, for them to turn around after all that, because we were hounding them every week, and
yep,
they said what was going to be 6 weeks turned into 6 months and then a year, okay, before they finally did that, sent us this paperwork that we have saying that we don't take this 40-year mortgage, okay, at 1% is point less than what we were.
They basically held a gun to your head, Tom.
Yeah,
they said, take it or we're foreclosing on you and you're losing everything.
Yeah,
and you know what? It's just not how a business transaction should happen.
No, it wasn't their fault I was laid off. But,
nope.
We went to them in earnest, you know, trying to do something about it, okay, to talk with them first and said, this is the only thing that we can do. This is the only program and this is the only way that this is going to work. And you have to follow these rules.
It's just a shame. I am so glad you're in your house. I'm glad you have a job again. I'm glad you're starting to rebuild your financial life. I think all that's great. But you played by the rules. You put the 20% down. You paid for your upgrades in cash. It's not like you had a zero down loan and you were betting the ranch with a $50,000 a year income buying a $500,000 house, which is what Countrywide did.
Right.
Thousands and thousands and thousands of loans just like that one. You actually did what the conventional lending requirements required, and you hit a spate of bad luck, and you didn't get the kind of help you really needed. And all I can say to you is that 40-year mortgage, when you're back on your feet, you should be able to refinance and hopefully do a little bit better and get yourself even an even lower interest rate and back to where it's going to make financial sense for you. So keep your eye on that ball. Mortgage interest rates aren't going up anytime soon. And there's going to be something out there for you. I'm quite sure of it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenn. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman. Given all you love to just one man.
57 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show. So glad you could join us today. I want to point out that we've got more information up at thinkglink.com. Click on news if you want to see the latest in ThinkGlink news. We're adding more stuff every day to it so that you can stay on top of all of these big real estate developments. We didn't talk about the stock market today, but it's sort of holding steady, just under 13,000. I think everybody's real concerned about what's going on in Greece. There was an agreement that came into play, and we're going to talk a little bit about that probably next week. But unfortunately, the music's playing, and that means our time is up for today. Very sad. I've so much enjoyed this show. Adam Goldfein is next. Please tune in next week to the Elise Glink Show, and we will tackle real estate and try to solve all the problems, the real state of real estate. That's next week on the Elise Glink Show. In the meantime, see over at thinkglink.com. Have a great week, everybody.